Okay, so welcome to first call for module 8, conflict. Fun times ahead. The next couple of weeks we're just going to be playing with conflict. I think this is really important work for our clients, and we'll talk a little bit more about why. But however you're feeling about conflict, and you may be watching the recording because you're like, I cannot face that today. I just want to encourage you to, hey, Charlotte, nice that you're here. Well done for being here. I really want to encourage anyone who's got some stuff going on around conflict to just kind of be with this, try and embrace it as much as possible. The idea behind this first week is that we're going to really explore how we as practitioners, you know, feel about conflict, how we show up to it, how we make sense of it, so that we can disentangle, right? So these next three modules, conflict one next week is all about the internal compass, which we start to play with, you know, really helping our clients to cultivate self-belief and self-trust, self-worth and self-acceptance. And our final module, which is all about goals and dreams and supporting clients with self-doubt to formulate goals, plan them and then achieve them. These last three modules are very much about working with someone who has a relatively good handle on their self-doubt stories, right? So you'll notice that just stop the share there because we don't probably need that screen. that the trajectory of our program is really following a relationship with a coaching client. And so different clients are going to kind of enter our world at different stages of their own development and their own sense making around self-doubt. But the idea of these last three modules is that you're working with someone who has a pretty good working knowledge of how their self-doubt's showing up. They have a sense of the kind of protective beliefs and behaviors that are at play, and they're ready to sort of stretch themselves a little bit, right? The reason that these last three modules are after that process is because I found through, and I often send loving prayers and thoughts to my early clients, right? But I worked with hundreds of people before I realized that my clients did not have the capacity to do the dreams and goals work right off the bat when they had a lot of self-doubt. That in some ways exacerbated their self-doubt because they would finally have the courage it takes to say, I want to work with a coach. And then they'd come along and we'd be like, right, what's your goal? And then, you know, they would find something would happen and they would fall at the first hurdle. So I learned through lots of practice, lots of work with clients, that we need to go at the pace of the client and get a real good handle on their sense making of the world before we start going, okay, let's go from good to great, because our clients may not be there yet, right? So the idea of the last three modules is that you are working with someone who has a reasonable sense of readiness for this, right? Okay, so with all that said, let's crack on. What we're going to talk about today, we'll do a bit of a check-in, we'll look at the aims of this module, and we're going to start to explore your relationship with conflict, right? So what are you bringing into conversations with your clients around their risks of things like judgment, criticism, rejection, right? Our stuff comes into that conversation. So we'll be entangled with our clients if they're bringing that stuff up and we haven't made sense of it ourselves. So that's what we'll be talking about today. And next week we'll go into more supporting our clients, okay? Anyone want to share anything that's come up over the last couple of weeks? from our last module, which was all about our own self-doubt, right? So we've gone from our own self-doubt to our relationship with conflict. Good times. If anyone wants to share anything, any revelations, any stuff that's come up in clients' work, anything you're realizing about your own themes around entanglement with clients, clients you find really amazing and the ones that are more challenging. Anyone want to share anything that's come up? Just want to make that space available to you. All good. Okay. And just to reiterate, once we complete this curriculum, you'll be invited to attend monthly support calls where you can bring literal, this is a client thing. I'm entangled. I don't know where I'm going. Right. So you'll be supported on an ongoing basis for as long as you fancy it to explore this stuff. Okay. I'm not going to leave you hanging. All right. Let's look at conflict and self-belief. So I think that the thing that we miss when we really feel a bit icky about conflict is that it has an enormous role, right? Whenever we feel the risk of conflict, it's helping us to know something. It's an issue needs to be addressed, a boundary is being crossed, a value is being stomped on, you're outgrowing a relationship perhaps, something in your life is there's a mismatch, there's a misalignment. And that feeling of disquiet is the way we know that. But depending on how we view conflict, how we feel about it, we may dismiss that, deflect from it, try and eat our way away from it, right? Like box set our way out of it, who knows? But when we're avoiding or ignoring that message from our intuition, from our our implicit memories, then we miss the opportunity. And I think it makes so much sense that we do avoid it because very few of us have had healthy conflict modeled to us, right? So I found that the risks associated with conflict, judgment, criticism, rejection, there's going to be an altercation, there's going to be a conflict. That is the number one reason that self-doubt protects us, right? So all of those risks, of all of the big risks, most of them are connected in the family of there's a risk of some kind of conflict, right? And that makes total sense because conflict is inevitable in human relationships. And most of the ways that we try to protect ourselves is about preserving our sense of belonging, right? So we're hyper vigilant often about when this might happen. And for folks, clients, or for those of us who are also working with neurodiversity and different ways of making sense of the world, we may have an additional kind of executive function issue where we're hypersensitive to the risk. So we almost get a double helping of it, right? Hypersensitive to the risk of rejection in particular. So it's worth being aware of this, right? Depending on how you show up, how our clients show up. I always assume my clients are a bit crunchy around conflict, right? Always assume that, right? So, and this makes sense when we're inviting our clients to experiment with anything that sits in this family of conflict. The reason that they don't follow through on the experiment may well be because they feel that sense of risk, of a discomfort. It's like, whoa, this is too dangerous, right? So there may be some work that's required by us to help them feel supported and to take smaller steps. Yeah. Most of us know that we don't need to be liked by everybody, that it's okay if people disagree with us. And we also have, implicit memories that suggest that there is a huge risk around conflict, right? A lot of people the most common form of trauma, from some of the research I've read, the most common form is of witnessing violence. And sometimes that is verbal violence and sometimes it is physical. But as kids, if we witness that, we very understandably make sense of the world through that lens. Right? And it creates some complex interpretations because it didn't quite happen to us, but it kind of did, right? So that's kind of where we're entering this from. The aims of this module are really just to explore our relationship with conflict. Awareness is everything, right? Just recognizing, oh, okay, I'm using one way of making sense of this. When it comes to any type of conflict, I'm just using the same approach all the time. That is hugely supportive of you finding alternatives, right? Just recognizing that. So we're exploring, we're growing awareness. There's no expectation that all of us are going to become conflict experts straight away, right? And we want to support our clients to explore their relationship, right? We want to consider our styles of conflict. Like, it can really help us to go, oh, this follows a pattern. Protective beliefs and behavior show up here, and I can kind of name that for myself so I can get a sense of what's going on. We also, when it comes to conflict, we're more likely to be aware of our emotional response, mostly because conflict, more than anything, tends to get us pretty emotionally responding, right? We get activated. So it's a really great opportunity to explore how we actually feel our feelings. And for a lot of clients that I've worked with, this is a revelation. I can feel my feelings. It sounds so basic, right? It sounds so, of course I can feel my feelings. But actually sitting with a feeling without distraction, I think it's one of the most complex things that we can do. Without trying to distract ourselves or comfort ourselves, just to actually be with an emotion can be huge for clients. And we also want to give ourselves and our clients some resources so that this isn't about trying to pretend the world isn't full of conflict, right? It's about feeling resourced when that inevitably happens, giving them some options and some choices that they can make, right? In the face of judgment, criticism, and confrontation, the big three. What we find with self-doubt is it's the perception of risk, right, that holds us back. If I do this, this might happen, right? And so actually what we're doing in this module is inviting our clients to kind of make it happen, right? If they have this judgment happening towards them, I'm going to be in that judgment and respond in a way that helps me know myself, trust myself, feel, you know, proud of how I showed up. And we're also really playing with what it means to listen quite deeply, right? As we're starting to, when we get into conflict, we usually bring a story and we bring a story about who's good, who's bad, who's right, who's wrong. Is this just me or does everyone do this? Yeah. And usually we have an agenda, right? So to actually come at confrontation, at conflict, at any kind of judgment or criticism with a kind of open curiosity, with some compassion, with the idea that I just want to understand what's happening here. I want to understand your way of making sense of the world, right? That enables us to listen in a way that deepens our relationships. And that, I think, is a profound skill to have as a coach. But what I have found from working through this with clients and who are coaches is that it also impacts your relationships in your life. When you start to go, oh, I'm just I'm just going to assume we're both trying to get our needs met here. So help me understand where you're coming from. All right, for those relationships that really matter to us, we're not talking about trolls on the internet. We don't need to invest time and energy on understanding their worldview, right? We're talking about the people that we have a lot of trust and connection with, deepening those relationships, allowing conflict to be part of that story is a way of expanding the whole container for that relationship. Yeah. And because this is not about theory, right? We want to give people really solid practices that they can use. Reframing, looking at polarities, looking at accountable language. They're the kind of ones that we're really interested in. And we'll talk much more about those next week. But these are practices for us to play with and to share with our clients and encourage them to play with. What I have found over the years, and I've done a bit of training in things like nonviolent communication, assertiveness courses, because every woman in the 80s went on an assertiveness course, right? In corporate Britain. So that was good. But those kinds of approaches to conflict can sometimes feel a bit wobbly in terms of what's the actual outcome that we want to have here. A lot of the time, they don't address anything like the power dynamics that are at play. How do you address a conflict with a boss? Knowing that they have full, you know, they have the power and control of your bonus at the end of the year, right? Or the entire team knows that they have an anger problem. How do we compassionately address conflict with that? You know, and this is the thing, when we put, it's the kind of ongoing challenge for us as coaches, when we put the onus on the individual to do all the work and we ignore the structural inequalities that are creating the conditions for this to be alive and thriving, we kind of miss the point, right? That's the limit. We as individuals, it is very tricky for us to change that. It's not to say it can't change, but it's tricky, right? So for me, it felt like if I was going to address conflict, I needed to be able to do that in a way that was endlessly pragmatic, but that also respected the sovereignty of both parties, right? And felt doable for folks with growing self-belief. So this is how we got to here. Okay. So I think that this is kind of the point of this week, and what I'm hoping that we're going to take away from this is that when we show up in order for us to show up in our healthy selves, our healthy adult selves, we really need to have some peace around our own relationship with conflict. Really need to be like, yeah, there's going to be conflict. It's okay. I can be with that. I'm learning how to be with that even is perfect. Right, I can expand my emotional range to cope with that. Yeah. So we're going to look at our relationship, our own relationship with conflict. I want to do a little bit of just self-reflection to start with, just to give us a sense of where you're coming at this from. So I've got a couple of questions for you to ponder, and then we'll do a little bit of sharing and playing, okay? And there's obviously like no right answers here. This is more about just being curious about what comes up for you. So a couple of questions. Firstly, what did you learn about conflict growing up? What did you learn about conflict growing up from your family? So you may just want to write down some bullet points. What did you learn about conflict growing up? I'm just going to open my windows. The noise. So what did you learn about conflict growing up? And further to that, do you remember playing a role in family conflict? And when I say role, sometimes we take on the role of peacemaker, or we try to distract people, or we try to be really good. I once coached with a stand-up comedian, and she said that this is where she honed her craft, making people laugh in the midst of family conflict. So what was your role? And just bringing this into the here and now, just bring to mind like the most recent conflict that stands out for you. If you tend to avoid conflict, you might think, I haven't had conflict in years, right? What was the most recent conflict that stands out? Just name it for yourself. And what do you remember thinking or feeling? So the most recent conflict that stands out for you and what you remember thinking or feeling. It's really common for this to be with your partner in life or a sibling or a close friend, someone you probably have a really safe relationship with. And then how was that conflict resolved? Did you slam a door and walk away? Did you hug it out? Did you change the subject? How was it resolved? Did you come to some kind of mutual win-win, non-violent ending? What happened? How was that last conflict resolved? Last two questions. When it comes to conflict, what is your protector worried about? What is your protector worry about when it comes to conflict? And what does your healthy self know to be true? Sure, Sharon. So what does your, when it comes to conflict, what does your protector worry about? What's your protector worry about? And then what does your healthy self, your healthy adult self, know to be true about conflict? That's right, whatever comes up might not be much. You might find you've got a lot in there. It's totally fine. I just want to open it up. What comes up for you as you write this down? What are you noticing in terms of themes or perhaps even connections? This might not be new information to you, but anybody want to share what's coming up? Yeah, Sarah.
So what's coming up? I grew up in a household that avoided conflict at all cost. Then when it did happen, it was massive. There was always one person was right, one person was wrong, and people were very, very hurtful. So my role has always been the peacemaker in the family and please everybody. I've done a lot of work around this because it's been such a challenge. And I think my husband and I definitely, because we've both come from that background, have worked really hard to do it differently. But sometimes when it goes well, I feel like I'm manipulating the situation now and I feel guilty about it. So I feel like I can get to a place where I can draw back and think, what's the outcome we both want? We both don't need to be right here. And it can resolve without a blow up and without the slam door. But then there's a little niggle that goes, oh God, have I just made. If I manipulated that situation. So yeah, I feel bad sometimes and feel guilty
Interesting.
for positive conflict. Yeah.
That's fascinating. So it's sort of like it's like the all or nothing distortion, right? We either have a big fight and everybody gets hurt, or we resolve it without the blow up and I feel guilty.
Yeah.
Interesting. And Sarah, just supplementary question. I'm curious to know, does that feel like that's the approach you take to every conflict, which is very, very common?
Yeah, I think it does. In a work situation, I would have said, feedback would have said, you're good in a conflict situation because I don't know, because I've always focused on like, there's got to be a better way of doing this. So I can always see bigger, what's the bigger outcome that we both want. And I think as you get older, you get better at not being the one that compromises too much. I think now I can hold a boundary slightly better than I would have done. Whereas before, I probably would have over-compromised to get the big outcome. I'm not bothered if people think I don't mind being in the wrong, but you know what I mean? Like that.
And it's interesting, isn't it? Because I think that's one of the complexities of that. And I'm offering you would identify with an accommodating style, do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
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 And that's one
I
of
think that's evolved though. I've got better at, I'm still accommodating, but I'm going to also say what I need. It's not perfect,
Totally.
but it's getting better. Yeah.
No, I love that. And I think that's most of us have in a pretty predominant style. And I'm with you. I'm tend to be either accommodating or adversarial. Grew up in a similar kind of environment where it was just a little bit chaotic. Never quite knew if it would be. Mum was very accommodating, like to the point of faultless accommodation. My father was very adversarial, and he wanted to be right a lot. So it was this weird combo that I would have inherited. And it's fascinating to me how that complexity of that, right? I want to accommodate, I want us to do this in a way that's kind. And it can sometimes feel like, have I just pleased everybody? Or have we actually, is this resolved or am I just accommodating your needs?
Yeah. Yeah. But I think it's when it actually is resolved and I feel like I've got, where I don't feel like I've had to accommodate everybody, that's when I feel guilty because I feel, have I manipulated this so it's in my favour? Does that make sense?
Right.
Yeah. So that's kind of where I'm
at. For you to get your needs met, it's like someone else has to lose.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. I've probably still got that hanging over. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really cool. Great share. Love it. And we're never kind of one thing, right? But we usually have one predominant flavor of conflict. Just to remind everybody, these are the four kind of styles: accommodating, adversarial, avoidant, and passive aggressive, which is a combination of accommodating and adversarial. Anyone else want to share what's come up as you've been? Yeah, Iris.
Yeah, I found it quite interesting to do the reflections, but I also feel like I didn't get to the, I still don't understand what my big thing is that I try to avoid in conflict, if that makes sense. But I actually did have a conflict just last week with one of my closest friends, and it kind of came off of the blue, and now we're on a friendship break. So it was pretty shocking, and it all happened over WhatsApp. And I know the main thing I felt after that was abandoned, and like just abandoned, really. And but I also didn't really know how to do it differently. It was just a very weird situation, because I would say that in that situation I actually spoke my mind and I said what I thought was wrong about the situation. And normally I don't think I really do that. Normally I would say I'm avoiding it all because conflict is very dangerous. And in this case I did, and I didn't get a lot of input back. And then it was, and I asked, are we okay? And then it was basically, no, I think we need a break. So yeah, I feel like I'm rambling a bit, but it was just interesting to see that I actually don't really understand what's up with me in conflict. I really have no idea, other than I generally try to not have it happen.
It sounds like this instance, and it's always harder, isn't it, when you're not able to read body language or hear the person's intonation. It's kind of a way of avoiding the conflict, right? To have it on a social media app rather than a conversation. It can be a way of sort of subtly diffusing it. And sometimes that's great, right? Like that's actually a really kind thing to do because it allows people to reflect and come back. But it also has its challenges. There's no kind of right answer here, right? So what I would just offer Iris is, just play with this stuff, see what comes up, right? See if you start to put some pieces together around where you tend to kind of fall on the type of conflict that you prefer. And honestly, like defining your conflict style isn't really the aim of this. It's more about how can I get to a place where I kind of accept that conflict happens and use different approaches depending on the context. Yeah. Right? How can I get to a place where I feel resourced to sometimes set a boundary and be a little bit direct, right? Mm-hmm. Knowing that you're taking care of yourself as well as trying to hold the relationship. And and grown-ups get to decide how they respond.
Yeah. And one thing that was quite interesting to observe or try and do was to both be the me who's hurt and who feels abandoned and is very like angry about all of it, and to let that happen and feel that, and then to also try and jump into the healthy adult self, even though I really didn't want to, and say, okay, this friend has always been there for me. She is like a certified amazing friend, so she probably, even though I don't understand the reason now, she probably has a really good reason for it, And it came out of her having, like, being concerned about me and that. So I thought, okay, while we're not talking, I'll just do my part to, like, work on myself and do my own stuff, like, to take care of myself, so that when we're talking again, I feel like I've done some things that might help with the topic of the conflict, if that makes sense. So that was interesting to observe, to both be, like, crying and angry and, like, very self-righteous and all the things, and be like, oh, this was mean and da da da, and then also to jump into, but actually on a bigger scale, I can see that something must have been up, you know, like, she's not crazy, she has good reasons, and we'll figure this out eventually. So that was pretty new for me.
That feels to me like a very accepting response. So very healthy. I think this is the thing, right? Like, even having done this work for years, I still find conflict icky. I still feel like, oh, I don't want to have this difficult conversation. It still brings up lots of body sensations that I find quite challenging, and all the feelings as well. And then I add on top my own expectations that, well, I teach this, I should be better at this, right? All the ego stuff gets involved. And it's really not about containing or managing any of that. It is about that self-acceptance. I've got needs, I've got emotions, and I've got this healthy adult self that is allowing me to see, to kind of go up a bit further and see the full context. We don't really know what was going on for your friend. Don't really know, you know, what else might have been contributing to the situation. And we don't really know how she was feeling or what she was thinking, because we can't mind read, right?
Yeah, true.
It's one of the great lies conflict tells us, right? I know exactly what you're thinking.
Yeah.
So I think just being able to hold that complexity is a really positive outcome.
Yeah, true.
If and nothing else comes for
it. Yeah, and it was really cool to see too that she had some thoughts about what I should do, like, in a specific situation in my life. And in the past, because I'm very conflict avoidant, I would have just been like, oh, she's right. Of course she must be right, because she is not me, and so she will know. And it was actually really interesting to play with just still... I actually don't think she's right, you know, like, to let myself think that and to have my own opinion, even though it literally means conflict. That was new. So yeah, anyways.
That sounds like the real gift of that conflict is that actually the voice you were paying attention to and advocating for was your own.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you, Iris. It's beautiful. Anyone else want to share anything? I just want to read Charlotte's note. Though my husband is conflict avoidant, whereas I always need to talk stuff through. The lack of engaging makes me frustrated, so I lose my temper. I recognize this one. I overcompensate because I feel horrible for getting angry, but really get anything resolved. I've been working on this, and it happens way less the more I understand myself. But weirdly, when it comes to family conflict, I can't remember much. Which I know can't be true, but I may think, maybe I used to avoid as a child, and as I've grown older, I swung way into the other side of it. Yeah, Charlotte, I really love this, and I just want to pick on that thing of not having very many memories of conflict. That is very common for folks who tend to avoid conflict. The role we sometimes play as children, when we grow up in a home with a lot of conflict, I don't know if that's true for you, but when there is conflict in the home and we kind of don't have the skills for it, one of the roles we can play as the kid is to sort of be the daydreamer and to sort of almost create, like, I don't know if any of you did this, but create like a whole fantasy world in your mind. You might escape through books or through nature or play. But the idea is that you become sort of a bit of a dreamy kid, and it's a really sophisticated way of avoiding the stuff that just feels too much, right? So sometimes our clients can sort of not have very many memories of conflict. And so then it makes it difficult sometimes to talk about some of the stories that have come. And so then as a result of that, and so then our role is to look at what's here and now for the client, and we help them to make some sense of that. Yeah, Charlotte, please feel free to share.
Hi, yeah, I'm just reading that back. I'm like, that was a bit waffly, but it's really interesting what you say, because actually I don't have many memories of being a child, full stop, aside from like the times when I was like creating something. And I was always like making stuff or in a little dream world. And like genuinely, I had a really like, I mean, in the sense that we all think we have happy childhoods, but like it was safe, secure, no conflict. Like we didn't have an unstable family unit. And like as a general whole, we were very like happy. But I wonder whether there's this thing of play that, you know, even as a young child, maybe there was this sense of internal conflict for me and like non-understood like worries about abandonment, which just led to me kind of retreating into that dream world, because I was constantly reading, daydreaming, crafting, disappearing off. So yeah, it was really interesting to kind of link that all together. So that was it for me.
Yeah, lovely, Charlotte. I mean, and I would just offer, you know, don't borrow trouble, right? If it feels like, you know what, my childhood was pretty cool and I'm good, then that's great. Like it's not a, there's no reason to kind of look for stuff. But I think if you are like, oh, let me just put some of these pieces together, I think that can be super helpful. Yeah. Yeah. Really cool. Love that daydreamy self, Charlotte. And sometimes that can just be a really fun way of allowing yourself to take care of that little self as well, is to, you know, that might be a way into that for you, is to allow yourself to daydream as an adult. I think, you know, we totally don't allow that as much as we possibly could, right? Daydreaming, reading, escaping into nature, play, these are all beautiful ways just to create that pathway into a sort of, you know, an innocence and a way of being in the world that just feels a little bit relieving from some of the stuff that happens when you're adulting, right? Yeah, good stuff. Yeah, Sharon.
Suddenly just popped up for me when you said bodily, what was it? Do you say bodily feelings or bodily?
Yeah, body sensations.
Well, that was it, body sensations.
Yeah.
And, you know, that is exactly how I experience conflict. Or that, I mean, just sitting here right now and just answering all these questions, I can feel it up here, I can feel it down here. It's all like, oh, you know, and it just, even every time there's the slightest hint of conflict, like an email coming into my inbox that I think, oh, it's going to be bad news, or somebody saying something, or the slightest thing, and I will experience immediately this bodily sensation. It's just horrible.
It's, well, what I would offer is that it's a really sophisticated communication from your memories, right? So I know there's a lot of info in the world at the moment about our body keeps score. You've probably heard this as a book called The Body Keeps Score by Barry Vanderfolk, I think his name is. Well, Hesselfolk. Anyway, I will figure out his name. But The Body Keeps Score is basically, it's about 20 or 30 years old now. So we probably need to update our thinking around this a little bit. But he was one of the first practitioners that looked into trauma and how trauma as an adult, or childhood trauma, presents as an adult. And he came up with this metaphor that our body actually remembers everything. And so when we're re-experiencing that trauma, which in therapy world is called being triggered, we often experience these body sensations that can be quite debilitating, right? And to lesser and greater extent. So exactly what you're describing, Sharon. What's actually happening, right, is that our memories keep the score. But and that gets presented into our bodies. So there is this very kind of clear connection between our minds and our guts. And people say that we even really have a kind of brain in the gut as well. Mm. So there is this very kind of well-known phenomenon that occurs where our memories are keeping a lookout for anything that will reactivate those feelings of risk. And that's exactly how self-doubt works, right? It's connected to the same thing. It's just on a slightly less traumatic scale, although trauma can be present. So it sounds like you've had experiences, probably you may remember them, you may not, but you may have had experiences where actually it did feel quite horrible to be rejected, to be criticized, to feel judged. And so there is this just reliving of that. It's like we've got this smoke alarm that's kind of going, where's the smoke? Where's the risk? Right? And then when it goes off. What's important to know about that is that it can't predict the likelihood of you being at risk. Right? It doesn't know what's going to happen. It just knows there might be something to worry about. I just want you to worry, right? So it's like, I'm reading the title of an email. I don't know what's in the email. So I don't actually know if I have an issue yet. I'm just reading the title of the email. That's kind of activating this bodily sensation.
That is so weird, Sas, because one of the things I've written down here about the what did you learn about conflict growing up? I mean, literally, if I start talking about conflict, we'll be here all day, so I'll keep it short. But suffice to say, I grew up in a very conflict-ridden home. And I've written down here that some of it was predictable and some of it wasn't. And the bit that was predictable was if my mum and dad stopped drinking, then that was predictable that there would be a massive argument. But it could fire up, something else would set it off. That was a bit more unpredictable. So all the time I was in this kind of, oh, as a child, like, what's going to, oh, something bad might happen, you know? So that's so interesting.
And honestly, I think that is almost worse because it's ambiguous risk.
Yeah.
So what happens to our little Sharon is trying to figure out the code. Tell me what the rules are so I can predict what's going to happen and take care of myself. Right, and she's, bless her, she's still doing that. She's still trying to tell you. Yeah. It's not ridiculous at all. It makes complete sense. And so what that tells me is that you're doing a lot to kind of try and keep yourself safe based on that very important formative experience, right?
Yeah.
So we don't need to worry too much about how to fix that right now. I think just knowing, oh, there's a really bloody good reason why I'm having this perhaps disproportionate response to just reading an email title. It's a really good reason for that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so the more compassion you can offer yourself right now, the more you're going to be able to just go, how else, you know, what else could be true here? How do I want to respond? How do I want to take care of myself? Just allowing yourself to kind of, I don't know, sometimes what can happen is there's a sense of false urgency in those moments. I've got to take care of things and sort it out very quickly. My encouragement would be to you to just sit with, what is this body sensation like? Do the kind of emotion cycle, go through that fully for yourself, where you notice the sensations, see if you can name emotions. Sometimes you'll be able to, sometimes you won't, and get a sense of like, what is that trying to tell me? Like, what's the message? And to do that, we just need to kind of pay attention to our bodies, right? And then when you are responding, you're doing it from a place of taking care of yourself, really just knowing, you know, this is an old response and I'm learning how to hold myself with compassion in the here and now. just going back to that place, I'm safe now. Look at all the things you've done to create safety for yourself.
Okay, thank you.
Beautiful. Great share, Sharon. Love it.
Thank you.
Love it. Cool, and we've got just another message from Lisa here around, yeah, she's clearly been a bit distracted. She's got other stuff going on. And then, yeah, had some conflict last night and went into that hiding mode. Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Okay, so laptop, his battery has gone. So, it sounds like for Lisa, there is that sort of, you know, that's passive behaviors, right? That hiding of the Netflix, the eating, the turning the phone off, like trying to kind of, you know, restore ourselves in some way, comfort ourselves in some way, and then coming back to respond in a way that is trying to meet this person halfway. This is so juicy. I think this is the thing that happens when we start getting really aware of our conflict patterns, is that you start to put some of the pieces together. And this is the really key aspect of conflict, is it's all like feeling resourced, feeling okay about conflict is really about knowing that you have choices, right? So you have choices about how you take care of yourself, what you choose to do and say to take care of yourself, and how you choose to respond to the conflict. When we are little, when we learn that conflict is usually always bad, something to be avoided or, gotten out of as quickly as possible, is that there is just this risk we've got to manage. And so our main aim is to sort out and get out of the conflict, end it as quickly as possible, right? And actually how we can change this into a much more healthy interaction is to start to see that conflict isn't necessarily a bad thing. It's about a mismatch of needs or emotions or seeking understanding, seeking to be heard and seen. It's usually going to be most difficult when it's the people we care about the most. And that's because we're trying to say, do you see me, in 100 different ways? Do you understand me? Do you care about me? Right? So all to say that this work is about expanding our capacity to respond in different ways, to respond with conscious choices, right? So there are real gifts in all of our conflict styles, in accommodating, avoiding, being adversarial, being passive aggressive. There are real gifts and strengths in all of these. And when we can kind of respond to conflict in a way that combines those strengths, we start to really feel equipped and in choice around how we're going to respond. So just for this last bit, I want us to get into small groups, and what I want you to start thinking about is how might your approach to conflict, how you feel about conflict, how might that be showing up in your coaching work, right? So, and just think about this, like the capacity for conflict and how you're managing that. So think about your business boundaries, right? In terms of how much you're working, how many clients you take on, the kinds of clients that you're working with, who are you saying yes to, right? How is your conflict style showing up in your business? What might you be saying or not saying on social media or in your newsletters or in the ways that you market your business, right? What are you holding back from? It might be about, oh, I don't really want to be in conflict with anybody in comments. I don't really want to be retweeted and cancelled, right? Like all of these stories. It's not necessarily about solving anything. It's more about sharing. This is what I'm noticing I do. Right. And so So the aim of this conversation, and we're just going to break for about 15 minutes, is for you to share, like, what I notice I do in my business, in my practice with clients that reflects my conflict style, and what could I do differently? What options do I have? And sometimes you might be like, I have no idea. In which case, how amazing. You've got a coach in the room who can maybe say, hey, well, could you try this? What about experimenting with this, right? What would that look like? And it's more about opening yourself up to a possibility. Yeah. Sound good? Okay. So I'm just going to pause the recording. Welcome back. Fun. Anyone want to share what came up there? Okay, got a couple of shares. Iris and then Fiona. Cool. Go for it, Iris.
Okay, so Fiona and I were in the same group, so we probably have something very similar to say. But it was super interesting. We talked a lot about boundaries and not enforcing boundaries or not having them, like not being clear on expectations, and then having certain like cancellation policies and stuff in our contracts and never adhering to them. And it was just really interesting because we also felt like, oh, maybe we are a bit entangled, because for the clients we like, we're happy to have let them cancel sessions and say, oh, we'll just add it to the end. And for other clients, there was more resentment, but that's, they're all doing the same thing, right? So that was really interesting to see. And then also talking about how if we were a business that wasn't so deep and emotionally connected with clients' lives, like a hairdresser or a cosmetician or just something, anything else that is a craft with appointments, how we wouldn't go back and say, you know, am I, like, I didn't get 100% of the results, you know, give me one more session for free now, or, you know, like if they have cancellation fees and stuff, we just pay it. And we understand that they can't take on clients in their walk-in place if we cancel and all of that. And it was just really interesting to see how much just it always, I guess, felt like the relationship was at stake in coaching, and how it might be. Yeah, I guess we just came to the conclusion that we really want to be clearer about boundaries, because it is quite messy and stressful for yourself to not know what actually happens when that thing in your contract actually occurs, and then you pretend like it didn't. Doesn't feel so great.
I love this so much, and this is totally what happened, right? And here's what I've noticed over the years, because I just want you to know there's no right answer here, there's no best coach practice here. I started off my practice with none of that shit. I was like, I'm so happy to work with clients. I don't care. I have no boundaries and I'll be so accommodating, and found myself working ridiculous hours to accommodate people. And then I got super resentful, and I was also started in supervision, and my supervisor, who had her own very strict boundaries, told me that I needed to sort that out. So I put in place really strict boundaries and had difficult conversations and felt super proud of myself and all that jazz. And what I have found now, and I will share a podcast episode with Bea Urbea, they are an anti-capitalist coach, and really look at what are the conditions we're replicating without thinking about in our businesses. And their approach was, you know what, I work with tons of clients who are neurodiverse. They are coping with a lot of marginalized additional stress. I don't want to be a shitty coach. If you're going to change your mind at the last minute because you're not going to get the most out of it, we're going to figure that out. And that's up to me as the coach to charge enough where that feels really good, to, you know, create enough space in my practice where I can do that. Like, all of that kind of stuff. And they said, sometimes I can't, you know, that's just not feasible, in which case they miss a session, they pay the fee, or we figure that out. But I loved that approach of being like flexible, right? And clear. And in kind of context specific, taking care of the people that you are. We are in the relationship business, which is what I love that you brought this up, Iris. It is different to a transactional of a haircut or something. But even if you have a really shitty haircut, you can say, you need to fix this now. I'm not going on the street like this. And something will usually happen, right? So I think this is the thing, is how can I be human in conflict? How can we take care of each other in this? Knowing that there may not be a win-win, but I'm going to try and understand what has led us to this conflict. So, yeah, and all to say, there is no right answer. There's no best practice here. There are just choices we make at different times based on what feels right. And that can change, you know? So, yeah. And sometimes it's like, there is a really obvious gaping hole for a boundary here. And I can totally feel into what I'm avoiding or what I'm overly accommodating, right? So it's more about like really kind of going a bit inward and thinking about what feels good to you. And I think that is really the approach that I would take to all of these tools. You'll find that there's quite a lot of tools in the next three modules. I don't really want to spend a ton of time talking about those, although I'm happy to in the discussion forum. And if you have questions that come up, please feel free to always, you know, send that feedback. But in our group calls, we're really talking about our own presence, how we think and feel and make sense of conflict, of self-belief, of our goals and dreams. Because as you get into this work, you know, you'll come to know, if you don't already, and I'm sure most of you have an idea of this, the tool isn't the thing that makes the difference. It's the relationship, the container, the willingness to meet the client where they are and support them to get them to where they want to be. Sometimes that takes a really
Yeah. It's always like an emergency where no one knows
what to do. What are we gonna do?
Oh, I thought it was my internet, but clearly it's not.
Like when you see everyone moving, yeah. You're like, oh, okay.
Oh god. Is she gonna come back?
Right? Oops.
Yeah, she's coming back. Here she comes.
Sorry. Hello. I disappeared. All right. I was like, you're all standing very still. Sorry. So all to say that, you know, you become the tool with these approaches. It's your presence, your sense making that is going to make the difference for your client. Yeah. Great spot though, Iris. Oh, I've got these little holes I could perhaps do some thinking about. Yeah. Fiona, did you want to share as well?
I didn't really have anything else to add, actually. Iris beautifully covered what it was really alive for me as well, that thing about sort of just compromising around like adding extra sessions and all this sort of shenanigans. But actually now you've described that podcast episode, I'm like, oh, okay, I feel like actually that's the space where I need to do some work, is like what do I really want to hold on to here and what can I make space for? So, yeah.
It's that, isn't it? We can just, and this is why I think our bodies are such wise sources of wisdom. We can feel into the difference between avoiding something and consciously choosing it. Right? We can feel into the difference between I'm just accommodating you versus it feels very clean to me to agree with you. Mm-hmm. Like our bodies know. Anyone else want to share? Yeah, Sharon.
Just to say that Sarah and I talked about the same kind of thing about, you know, refunds and not, you know, I was sort of saying that I was in another group and this person in the group said, oh, we don't do any refunds under any circumstances, you know, and I was like, wow, wish I could be like that. And then Sarah asked me a really good question, and she was sort of saying, "Oh, what did you think of the person who had that boundary?" And I was like, "Well, on the one hand, I was like, yeah, that's amazing. You know where you stand with them. You know, no messing about. Wish I could be like that." But on the other, there was this little bit of a kind of, "Oh, well, that's not very kind." And, "Oh, you don't know what's going on in that person's life." And so I'm not sure where, actually, do I really want to be like that? So, you know, kind of, so we did think about, we did talk about, I said, you know, being kind and respectful and a nice person, stuff like that is actually quite important to me in business and in life. So maybe that was too much at the other end of the scale, as much as on the surface I was going, I want to be like that. So that was really interesting.
Well, and it's interesting, you know? Isn't it, to notice, am I using kindness, which is a noble old value to hold, right? Am I using that as a way of avoiding putting a boundary in place?
Probably, right? Yeah.
Because there's some real strengths and that directness, that clarity can be really comfortable. Clients might feel a bit like no one has any boundaries. I don't even know how to be with that, but I know it's something I need. And then they work with someone who doesn't have any. Do you know what I mean? It's like, who's going to model this for me? Right. And so it's really about getting quite clear for yourself and knowing you get to make the decision. And you know, honestly, I think that's what business ownership really involves, making decisions over and over and over again. Right. But making those decisions and feeling like I'm really clear about why I'm making this decision. And the pros feel aligned to my values. The cons are the ways I'm protecting myself, that there's a clear enough line there. It doesn't have to feel, like I said, it doesn't always have to feel nice for it to be valuable when it comes to conflict, right? We could, you know, I mean, I could be very accommodating around time zones and, you know, running these calls at different times and all that kind of jazz, and I know it would shatter me. There's no way I would be able to function. So it's like, these are the boundaries, this is when we're having the classes, you know, everyone figure it out.
Yeah,
I trust you to figure it out.
Yeah.
Okay,
nice,
thank you. So yeah, conflict opens us up right into, ooh, these are little icky little spots that we're gonna be looking at. But I think it is really, really worthwhile to just become more and more aware of how you make sense of conflict and the way that you protect yourself from the risk of it, the ways that you can resource yourselves to have more choices, and just experiment lightly in low-risk contexts, right? This can be a real gateway drug into having a ton more boundaries and just feeling really like solid. I usually give the example of a client I worked with. She was an academic, super sorted in her work life, but in her family, she was one of six kids, very enmeshed relationship with her mother. And anyhow, in midlife, she found out that she was completely lactose intolerant. Went round to her mother's house. Her mother did not believe in this thing called lactose intolerance. It's just modern life, isn't it? Just get on with it. And for the first time, my client was able to say, "I really don't want milk in my tea." And her mother was like, "Don't be so ridiculous. That's kind of how it comes." She was like, "No, please don't put milk in my tea." And it was the first time in her life that she'd ever said no to her mother. And she was like, her mother just went, "Oh, okay, love, fine, it's all right." And she was just like, wait, the whole universe just tilted. It was literally a gateway drug, like just, and that was her first experience of putting a little stake in the ground for herself. So all to say, you can't take small enough steps for this to matter. It's all building up evidence that it's safe for you to have conflict with other people. and it's safe for you to advocate for your own needs. Yeah. The more we do that, the easier it's going to be when our clients rock up and say, I can't put boundaries in place with my mum. You're not going to go, yeah, me neither. What are we going to do? Right? Yeah, beautiful. All right, folks, go play with conflict and have a think about how this shows up for your clients. And we'll talk more about that next week. All right, everybody, take care. Get well soon, Charlotte. We're thinking of you. All right, loves. Bye-bye. Bye.